Opening day in baseball is upon us. NBA playoffs are just around the corner. Lots to get into on 3rd and 5. Yeah, welcome into another episode of 3rd and 5. James Thwaites, Dave Rice, myself, Simon Hampton in the chair, ready to talk a bit of American sport. Gents, how have we been? I missed you this weekend. I was away catching some sun down in Florida.
Hang on. Florida makes it sound like sexy and cool. Whereabouts in Florida were you?
On the Florida panhandle.
Okay.
We're not going to get it. Tampa. Nothing wrong with Tampa.
Okay, no, there's some things wrong with Tampa, but like overall, it's not as bad as you think.
What
were you doing down in Tampa?
What do you think we were doing? We played some, played some golf.
We want to know.
Played some golf, went to a Yankee spring training game, and then went home and went to bed, and got an early night. So
nice, as we do on every trip.
No, it was funny. I'm always amazed traveling around America how different the people in the cities are. From city to city, and I mean New York to Tampa is pretty stark. That's a particularly stark example, but it is quite interesting. And certainly in Tampa, you're just like everyone down here very different to what you see in New York City.
I think the other thing, like, that you don't really grasp until you're over in America, is that America's bigger than Europe, or basically the same size, and it's basically got the same amount of people across all of Europe. And so each state is basically its own little country that operates by itself and things like that. So it is super different, and like the climates are pretty crazy when you get around. But spring training's cool. Like I would want to go to spring training games. It looks kind of fun. Like, obviously, for people that don't know baseball, a whole bunch of teams do it down in Tampa. Just the weather's better. They got a whole bunch of stadiums, so the Yankees are down there. Arizona, I think, is the other one, isn't it? So, it's a cool place to do. Like, just go down, just watch baseball for a couple of days. It's smaller arenas. Like, it's great. Yeah,
and Thwaites, it is super cool. You walk around into the outfield bleachers, and you're basically at grass level in the outfield. Like, you don't get that close to Major League Baseball players in the actual Major League stadium. So it is cool. A cool experience. The atmosphere is pretty relaxed as well, so you can sort of just sit out in the sun, have a few drinks, and there's a game in front of you, but the result's not too important. So definitely cool to tick that one off. Enjoyed it.
I mean, the Yankees, they actually own the little 10,000 seat arena or stadium that they play in for spring training, right? Like, that was actually
all the teams
built
do.
By
yeah all the teams
oh,
do.
So they're all home stadiums.
Yeah, they're usually like a stadium within like a complex of fields that each team owns, and so they'll play their spring training games there in February and March for the major league team, and then they'll usually have one or two minor league teams that actually play their season out of that stadium. And so Thwaites and I were down there in August last year, and we saw one of the Yankees minor league teams play there. There were like 50 people in the stadium, but. So they use that facility all year round, and then they'll rehab players down there and stuff.
So that was the first live game you've seen with this new pitch clock. Was it noticeable as a patron?
Yeah, it was so much faster. Like, we were sitting out in the outfield enjoying the game. Like, we weren't paying too much attention to the game, but, keeping an eye on things. But certainly it was like, look up and we're already in the seventh inning. Better go and run and get our last round of beers before they close the bars. So it was, I noticed it for sure. It was definitely a punchier game. But that's good to me. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out in the regular season, because we're just losing dead time.
Yeah, it's going to be particularly useful, because Yankees play in the Bronx, or even if you go to a Mets game, like, neither of them are that close to where any of us live. So to be able to actually, if you go to a Thursday night game, which normally starts at 7 or 7:30, you could actually get home at a reasonable hour and watch the vast majority of it, when previously you might have to sort of duck away around that seventh inning if you didn't want to get home at midnight.
Agreed. It's good. I'm a big fan. You guys got plans to go to any games this season? Anything on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a friend coming over from New Zealand, so I think we'll probably go to a Yankees game towards the end of April, but still might be a bit cold. I mean, Dave's brought this up before. Those kind of early games are, you know, like, still a bit cold in New York. Obviously, you get the beer blanket on a bit, but yeah, I mean,
or you just again, go. You can also just go home in the second inning as well. That's the other option.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Maybe with the pitch clock, you last to the fourth.
I'm just catching strays now, but I was about to give Dave credit because I was like, I am excited about going to the San Diego Padres game this year, so it's definitely high on my list.
Yeah, I keep seeing like lists. You know, whether it's obviously this week because it's about to start tomorrow. There's all these lists on ranking the teams, right, and the chances, or might be the bullpen, or your just overall team, and the Padres are always up there. So what a pick! A couple weeks back.
They're a fun team as well. It's like San Diego. It's not a big market. I think we talked about this on another pod. It's like, I think we did talk about this. We were like, you know, if you're going to pick a team, it's the Padres. And I think they're far and away probably one of the funnest teams in baseball. Well, we were going to start with the NFL, but I think it makes sense to just carry this on and start with baseball. So given that is the hot topic at the moment with opening day coming up tomorrow or... just been, depending on when you listen to this, recording it on Wednesday. So who do we like this year? Who are our picks to win Major League Baseball this year?
Tell you what, my faith in the Yankees is kind of going downhill. They just seem to have no accountability at the top. General managers making silly moves again, obviously already getting hit by injuries. And when you kind of look at the strength of some of the other teams out there, I just don't think the Yankees are doing it this season either. So that's kind of disappointing. I honestly don't know at this point. Obviously, there are some favorites out there. Kind of where I started looking was the teams that did well in the playoffs last year, and if they can go above that. I think the Yankees, unfortunately, are probably doomed to miss out on that again to – probably a team like the Astros. They may obviously go a bit further, but Astros going in have got to be hot favorites this season again. I kind of want the Padres to get up a bit, or the Blue Jays. Obviously, we've been talking about
the Padres. I think it's the Padres, bro.
Whatever, mate. Don't. As a New Zealander,
you've been hanging out with South Africans too
Padres. None of us can sit there and just be like okay with being like we pronounce vowels correctly from New Zealand. Absolutely not. but anyway, I kind of want San Diego to get up, but also I'm going to be keeping an eye on Toronto. That's probably where I'm going to put a cheeky bet. Toronto, we talked about it last year at around this time. They really did not live up to the hype. So Toronto's going to be my cheeky bet, and then I think Cy as well, my cheeky bet as well to win their league and have a cheeky go at a World Series run is the Mariners. I actually really like them in playoffs. Yeah, I think they just obviously, they were actually fun to watch. It's actually really fun to watch like an underdog get up there and kind of get into those games. San Diego was pretty much the same. They obviously knocked out a bunch of people. So yeah, I mean, cheeky bets, I'm definitely going Blue Jays and Mariners, but realistically it's probably the Astros to lose this year.
Yeah, I really like the Blue Jays call actually, and with the Yankees injuries to start the season, I'm actually favouring the Blue Jays to win the American League East at this point. I think they look really good this year. They need a, you know, they were strong last year, and they had a little bit of a down year from their best hitter Vlad Guerrero Jr. And so if he can bounce back and they can get some bounce back from some of their pitchers, that they've made some smart additions in the outfield. And I think they're a really strong unit right across the board. And so I think, you know, it's going to be neck and neck with the Blue Jays and the Yankees. And so, you know, with the Yankees roster really depleted at the moment with injuries, I think I favour the Blue Jays there. Love the Mariners call. One of the teams I'm actually interested to see this year, and looking at the odds, I think they're a little bit undersold, are the Angels with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, because I think they've got a really nice young starting rotation, a lot of young pitchers that probably aren't household names there, but I think can perform really well. They've obviously got Ohtani and Trout. They've made a couple of other minor additions across their roster this year, and looking at the odds, they're at plus 4,000 right now. That's behind the White Sox, behind the Twins, behind the Brewers. I'd favor them above all of those teams. Behind the Rays, I'd even favor them above the Rays. So
hang on, plus 4,000. You acting like you're full blown American. $41 for every dollar you put that, on.
And I can't find how to convert it on the FanDuel website. So easiest
way to do it with the plus ones is if you put $100 on, that's how much you're winning. With those plus.
Okay, so $40. So that's exactly what I told you to do with the Mariners last year, was a $40 pick. So my $40 pick this year is the Los Angeles Angels, who have been promising to contend for about 10 years with Mike Trout there.
How did the bet last year go, the Mariners?
Well, I think it went I think $40, given where they finished, was probably underselling them.
Correct. They didn't win. 100%. And they went down to $9. So you can't say that's a bad bet. I'll tell you what's a bad bet. Betting on that New Zealander that got absolutely smashed over the weekend in boxing.
What it has is the exact same result as putting it on the Mariners, unless you're laying the bet during live betting, like so during the season as it got to lower. Then you're sort of hedging it, then that's the only reason.
Completely disagree.
40-1 shot's not coming in.
But if a 40-1 shot, the odds shift so much that it turns into a 9-1 or an 8-1, you've got to consider that a good bet because you've got better odds. Yeah, and I will completely defend that to the end of days.
I'm just saying, unless you're...
If a bet doesn't come in, obviously it's not a great bet because it didn't win. That's a stupid example. Like, I don't like that at all, Dave. Bloody hell, mate.
End of the day, like, all I'm saying is simplify it. You put on a bet, it doesn't win. Put it simply there. I think you guys nailed it on the head with all the teams you just went through. The only other one that I was surprised with how they didn't do that well last year... or as well as the Braves. I feel like they are like a team. To me, they are the Astros of the is it National League, the NL?
Yeah.
Where they just are so consistent and, you know, so they are a team that I'd probably expect to be one of the teams to be on their side, while it's kind of clearly the Astros. And completely agree that for the Yankees, their biggest rival in the AL East is definitely the Toronto Blue Jays. So I don't think I had too much more to add. I think you guys kind of went through pretty good.
Well, I think you've kind of it's what's interesting to me is that I think when you touch on Atlanta, is I think arguably you could make a case for the three favorites in baseball this year being in that same NL East with Atlanta, the Mets and the Phillies as well. I think there's three really strong teams there. The Phillies obviously went to the World Series last year. The Mets have been spending up big. Atlanta's got a great young core that they've extended most of their players, and so they'll be around for a while. And those are three teams that should be really strong this year. So that's going to be a fun division to watch. But yeah, I think the New York rivalry as well is going to be really good because the Mets are actually outspending the Yankees these days, and so that feels like a genuine rivalry. So really looking forward to the Subway Series this year. That should be good fun.
Here's a good question then for both of you guys. Yankees are basically $8.50 to win the World Series. Mets are $9. Obviously, they sit on different sides of the division. Who do you think is going to go further realistically this year? Because in my head, I'm looking at this and I'm just like, Mets. But obviously there's a tough injury to start the year with, what's his name, Diaz being out.
Diaz is out. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. The good thing with Diaz is he's a relief pitcher, so you're losing one inning of pitching there, and you've still got guys like Verlander's coming to the Mets this year. You've still got Scherzer there, so you've got two really good pitchers. You know, you always worry about injuries. I think the Mets, like, I think they probably edge the Yankees at the moment. I think the Mets look more just desperate to win, and I wonder at the trade deadline if the Mets will be more likely to push the chips in a bit further than the Yankees will be to go out and make some additions mid-season. So I think they're both two very good teams that'll definitely be there or thereabouts at the end of the year. But for me, Mets are slight favourites at this point.
The argument against the Mets would be that, and you've said it, which is they're in a division where they're going to have to play the Phillies and the Braves, you know, 20 times or whatever. So there's going to be a lot of losses there, close losses and close wins, you'd imagine. but that's going to hurt their sort of, you know, they're probably more likely, as we're looking at it, to be a a wild card team.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to do it the hard way. Now the Yankees have a better chance of winning their division, I think, even with the fact that they've got injuries. But yeah, in terms of like, and once you get to the playoffs, as we've talked about before, baseball, it's just such a, just having the guys fit and firing at the right time, and you just need to kind of get on a little run because it's, you fluctuate so much during the season. So it is a bit of a lottery once you get down there.
Yeah.
I hate to ask you both this, because I know you're big Yankees fans, and you're obviously both far more into baseball than I am. Do you think the Red Sox are going to do better than last year? Because last year seemed like an absolute train wreck for the Red Sox.
One interesting player to watch would be the guy Yoshida, who's come over from Japan. It's always interesting when guys, you know, big names like that, I think they're giving him about $100 million, when big names like that come over from Japan, because you never quite know how they're going to go. And they've obviously given him a lot of money, and he's hit really well in Japan, but hard to know how he'll do in the majors. I think they just don't have the cattle. I mean, I could see them, maybe things go their way and they can maybe keep in the wild card conversation with an even record, but I don't think they're challenging the Blue Jays and Yankees.
Yeah, they might get more wins than last year, but I think the bar was quite low from last year, so I don't think that necessarily means they're going to be a success.
Yeah, and they lost, I mean, they lost Bogaerts as well to San Diego, remember, and he's a key player for them.
I mean, are you two both excited about the Yankee season? Like, are you feeling like, you know, they have a really good chance this year? Obviously, you're excited to get along to games, to watch some live sport. Dave, obviously, taking a young child along to some Yankees baseball. But, like, do you have high hopes? Like, are your expectations through the roof? Or, you know, do you think, you know, whatever happens, happens?
I think I'm about where I was a year ago, where I'm like, I think they're good and they've got a chance, but I'm not like saying like, oh yeah, they've blown us away last winter, because the big move was re-signing Aaron Judge and bringing back a guy that they already had, and the Carlos Rodon signing's exciting for sure, but you know he's injured at the moment, and the other big one was re-signing Anthony Rizzo, so they've re-signed a couple of key players. And so I think they're probably a little bit better than last year. And I'm excited to see how this young guy goes at shortstop that they've just called up, the 21-year-old Volpe, who had a great spring training. And so he'll be their starting shortstop going forward this season. So that'll be interesting to follow how he goes. But, yeah, I mean, I think they're in with a good chance, but I'm not saying, oh, yeah, they're clearly better than the Astros now or anything like that.
Yeah, there's 162 games to go, so I don't get too worked up in March about it. But, I mean, they exceeded expectations last year. I think compared to a couple of previous seasons where I actually thought, you know, these guys have a real chance, like, not that I know a hell of a lot, but I had a lower expectation last year, and obviously on the back of Judge's sort of standout year, they probably exceeded in terms of the regular season.
Yeah. Well, that's the baseball season. We're in the midst of the NFL off season now, with the draft probably 3 weeks away. Big news in the past few days was Lamar Jackson revealing that he handed in a trade request to the Baltimore Ravens early March, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Ravens obviously haven't made a move. They also haven't re-signed him to the long-term big money deal that he seeks. So this is clearly a move from Jackson to try and force Baltimore's hand to either, you know, give him the super contract that he wants or trade him, basically. So with this news in hand, what's our read on the Lamar Jackson situation here? Are we thinking he leaves now, or still thinking he stays in Baltimore?
I mean, part of me hope he stays, because otherwise I'm going to have to walk back my comments to Dave, because Dave has been very adamant that we've most likely seen Lamar Jackson's last time in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. And, you know, like, I will put my hand up and say I give Dave shit all the time. But, you know, like, this is a great prediction from Dave that he has stuck to for a long time. That looks like, you know, it could happen. I think it's just been a weird week as well. Like, the timing of Lamar Jackson Posting that information on Twitter was quite funny because the NFL owners meeting and conference of general managers was happening. So they were all together in one place. I think it was in Arizona this year. So immediately, John Harbaugh and a whole bunch of others were just swamped with reporters' questions. To be fair to like John Harbaugh, like he has stuck to his guns. He says he likes Lamar Jackson as a quarterback. He wants him back. He expects him back. But, you know, what's been coming out in the media has been kind of interesting. You know, it's super clear that Lamar Jackson is trying to get this Deshaun Watson style contract, which is, you know, 200 plus million, all fully guaranteed. The Ravens aren't wanting to do it. Lamar Jackson's representing himself as well, which makes it a little bit more difficult because, you know, whether it feels a lot more personal than what would normally be a, you know, business transaction. I don't know if that's playing into it, but it's been pretty interesting to like have a look at the odds of, you know, where he will land. The Indianapolis Colts are a favorite landing spot for him at the moment, followed by the Patriots, then the Falcons, then the Lions. The Lions would be a bit of a weird one for me, considering how like Jared Goff went, considering their high round draft picks. Like, I feel like they're going to give Jared Goff one more year for sure, before looking for a quarterback of the future. Falcons would be really cool for me. I'd love to see him on the Falcons.
The Falcons the would Colts be great. The Falcons would be, I think, make the most sense out of all the teams. I look at the Colts and I'm thinking, they've got the fourth overall pick. Suddenly it becomes, you know, it's a becoming a steep price to pay. And obviously it's Lamar Jackson. It's better than anything they're getting at fourth and better than what they've got. But I don't know why we're not hearing more about the Falcons. What do you think, Dave?
The Falcons are, to me, the obvious. They've been the obvious sort of suitor since all this chat's been. I don't feel like they've always been. The ones that, I mean, you talked about last week, and there's a couple of teams where I feel like they should be kind of looking after what you said, New York Jets. I love that chat where it's just, you know, kind of keep the Packers kind of, you know, that should bring down the Packers' asking prices, even if it's... Even if you have actual no genuine interest to pick up Rodgers, sorry, to pick up Lamar, like even just having that conversation, you know, and making that public. Another dark horse as well. Oh, sorry, and then a couple more. Sorry, Washington Commanders. I don't know why they're
ownership not. Maybe making a big splash.
Yeah, and actually there is talks about the new ownership, like they're trying to get that through before the draft, right? Which do you just sort of think that maybe teams are like. They're going to wait for the draft. I mean, but if teams are talking about Indianapolis, even the Commanders, depending on what you do with Lamar, will depend on how you attack the draft. Say like the Commanders, maybe they trade up to try and get a QB. So, yeah, there's a lot of like things going on in the background. I'm sure a real dark horse would be Carolina. So yeah. They would obviously trade back the first, which seems. And I know I agree with folks like that. It seems just idiotic that they would even trade up to then trade back. And they'd probably lose out. There'd be like a net loss in what they've done, but maybe they would had no intentions of getting Lamar, and then, you know, the decisions sort of shifted, and they're working how they can sort of do that. So, they should be a weird one, but that's I wouldn't kind of rule them out as being on there. I've also heard talks of New England,
Patriots. Yeah, they're the second favorite.
Oh, second. Sorry, I missed that. But yeah. I don't know, like none of them seem like slam dunks.
This is the thing, right? Like when you look at it. So the Falcons have come out and said that they're not interested in Lamar Jackson. I reckon that's bullshit. Like from like a fan's point of view, and I think we're all kind of like leaning this way, we were like, Colts play boring football. Like, you know, last time they were exciting is when Peyton Manning was there. Maybe a bit of time when Andrew Luck was there and was healthy. Patriots kind of play boring football. You know, it's like very grindy football or a defensive team. Falcons would be fun as hell. Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and like their other team members, their new running back. Like, that would actually be a really fun, exciting football team to watch with Lamar Jackson, like, sitting under center. Like, I'd love to watch that. It would be explosive. It would be great. I think as a young team that's coming through, perfect quarterback to have there. Again, it all just comes to me, like, how much they're willing to give up. And it'll be very interesting to see what the Jets give up for and Aaron Rodgers. It'll be very interesting to see what any team gives up for Lamar Jackson.
If you're Carolina, like, surely you're looking at this and thinking, like, Lamar Jackson's still young and is surely a better commodity because, A, he's proven, than what they can get in the draft. There's probably a little more upside in the draft. But, and then you're starting to think, well, surely if the Ravens are losing Lamar Jackson, then that first overall pick and the chance to get the next franchise quarterback immediately is hugely appealing to Baltimore. And so then if you're Carolina, you're thinking, well, what we gave up to Chicago to get that first overall pick is effectively what we gave up to get Lamar Jackson. You know, maybe there's a little bit more thrown in there. But that becomes, I think, a deal that Carolina should really seriously consider.
I just don't know. I don't think giving up the first overall pick for Lamar Jackson is worth it.
Really?
The reason why I think there could be an element of it being worth it is there's and again we've spoken about this where there's just no consensus on these four. Yeah. It's such a unique quarterback class where we could very well have four QBs go in the top six, seven picks, maybe even five. Yet there's not really an overall consensus on who that one or even two is. Like, so, you know, because I've seen murmurs that the Panthers are looking very seriously at Richardson at number one, which I think I've spoken about before. They did not need to draft up to one. And again, that's probably just all, I mean, this is all could be just gamesmanship, but yeah, it's going to make the draft really fascinating because it's just, yeah, you're hearing all these things that are probably incorrect or just crock of shit. But yeah, for me, like, Lamar's proven MVP winner. Like, if I was a Panther fan, I would not be against. Like, these other four, they all have negatives about them, so they all might be duds. Is kind of the point.
Yeah, but I think I'm turning it on the flip side and telling you why you're both wrong. Panthers aren't going to move out of there, not for Lamar Jackson. The reason being is their current quarterback is Andy fucking Dalton. Like, if they bring in a rookie quarterback, they're still going to do shit, right? They're still going to have a top five draft pick probably next year. And we all know, and we've talked about it, and Dave, you brought it up before, next year's draft class is way better at quarterback than this year's draft class. If you bring in Lamar Jackson, you're going to do like an 8-8 season. Like, you're going to be middle of the pack. You're going to drop down the order. You're probably not going to succeed, like, immediately, and it's going to make it hurt a lot. So you're going to have to give up all of your future to try build around Lamar Jackson. From a Panthers point of view, from a risk point of view, totally get what you're both saying with, you know, drafting young quarterbacks and rookies. Like, it is not a proven commodity. Lamar Jackson is. But I just think from a Panthers point of view, you've traded up. You've given up DJ Moore. You had a season where you lost Christian McCaffrey. You need to rebuild around a good young core, and you'd be giving up too much again for a Lamar Jackson. So I think they stay with it. I think the Panthers probably have a really shitty season. They're still going to have a top five pick next year. So if the rookie that they draft isn't lights out, they're going to do what the Cardinals did and go back-to-back quarterbacks in the first round all those years ago.
Interesting. I disagree, but what I do think is that we are going to, I think this is going to build up towards the draft, and I think there's so much at stake in this year's draft. I haven't followed the draft too closely in over the years, but this feels like a very interesting one, one where the stakes are quite high, and one where we don't really know what's going to happen because, you know, there's four quarterbacks that could sort of each go first overall, or maybe three. But yeah, I think hopefully we start to sort of, you know, the Rodgers and Jackson storylines kind of build to a pressure point heading into the draft.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to talk about running backs now. Running backs struggling to find a home, apparently. One of them, your old mate, Dave, Zeke Elliott. There's a few others there as well. But to me, this is like, veteran running backs are just not that appealing. As a safe bet, and we've talked about this before, where running backs are over the hill very early in their career, and you know, we've talked about maybe running back rookie contracts should be a bit shorter to account for that. But to me, guys like Zeke Elliott are just, you know, you pay him big money, it's an accident waiting to happen. What do you think?
Well, ironically, yeah, you're talking about Zeke Elliott kind of trying to find a home now. It's probably, you could pinpoint his contract a few years back, which has kind of created this. Yeah. this lack of, you know, lack of willingness from owners to sort of invest, certainly on big guaranteed money or on longer contract. Players obviously want some sort of security for long future, for their sort of future that they and that they're just not getting them. And what you've seen in the off season this year, not just actually not just with running backs, even with tight ends as well, is there's all these like 1 year deals going on, 1 year, 2 year, very limited contracts, and it's crazy. So, I think it started with Zeke's contract a few years ago, and I think and teams are just not going to do it because I think it probably hurt the Cowboys in terms of their overall roster management and within the salary cap to kind of, you know, be a true contender.
Yeah, probably. I even think it probably goes back a bit further than Zeke. I'm not disagreeing that I think it was a bit of a weird contract that they obviously got bullied into. But to me, kind of like the one standout moment that I can think over the last like 10 plus years is probably Le'Veon Bell. Didn't get his contract that he wanted with the Steelers set out, then went to the Jets, had a pretty shit year. Melvin Gordon, obviously was, I think, at the Chargers, did a big holdout 1 year as well. So these guys that were doing the holdouts, yeah, they're probably doing the right thing for them and what looked like other running backs at the time. But I think owners and GMs didn't get bullied into these contracts beyond that. And it just showed that running backs like almost feel like a dime a dozen. Obviously, you've got these elite level running backs like a Saquon Barkley, probably your pass catching backs like Alvin Kamara, who are obviously very electric. But you're always going to need, probably three or four running backs on your roster. And, you know, doing what the Eagles did, where you had Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Kenneth Gainwell. You've got three running backs who are all cycling through the game. The Patriots have been running back by committee for years and years and years. They didn't pay Damian Harris this year. He's left. He's going to Buffalo? To be with James Cook. Yeah. So just to me, it's just kind of like there's no proven value in it. It's not like a quarterback where it's like they have this longevity. They're unfortunately just stuck in these like cycles of doing, you're on your rookie contract, you're going out of your rookie contract, you're probably getting one 3 year deal after that, and then probably nothing. You're probably bouncing around on 1 year deals, obviously a couple of exceptions, but with all this going on, I'm pretty interested to see what happens with Austin Ekeler. He's probably the only running back that I can think of in recent memory, apart from Adrian Peterson, who has managed to get round to his third round of long-term deals. He's trying to get like a three-year deal from the Chargers. He actually asked for a trade request. So it'd be pretty interesting to watch. But
yeah, that'll be interesting because I don't know if he'll get it from anyone because the owners are just not that willing. Simon, at the top, you mentioned, I don't think we've talked about on the pod, we've maybe offline we have, which is around my theory that they should shorten. So obviously you have your rookie contract, which is 4 years, and then there's always a fifth year option for the team. I feel like for the running backs, it should be shorter. It should only be like a 2 year contract, so then they can get paid when they're still what I would deem their prime, they'd definitely be in their prime entering their third year in the league, assuming they've sort of managed to stay injury free. And that's just because of the mileage that they pick up, even at high school, but certainly at college, more so than any of the other positions. So it just seems harsh that they, just because there's a position they play, and the nutrition, like, you know, the likelihood of injury, that they're getting penalized for that.
The only downside I see to that, Dave, is that I don't know if the players themselves would go for it. And the only reason being is, like, even if, let's just say, the owners agree to an NFL player association, which I don't think the NFLPA would go for it at all, the thing it opens up for me when I think about that is, at the moment, you sign a rookie deal, a bunch of that's guaranteed, if not fully guaranteed, if you're one of the top picks, you know, and that's fully guaranteed over 5 years. If suddenly, like, you sit down there and you've got a 2 year fully guaranteed contract at lower money, and, like, you know, as you brought up before, like, there are a whole bunch of busts that happen around the NFL in the first round, especially at these power positions. So from a player's point of view, you dropped out of college, you know, like, or didn't finish your degree. You've now entered the NFL. You're signed a 2 year, you know, $4 million deal. You rupture your ACL. You're not coming back. suddenly it kind of sets them up for failure ongoing, which is kind of the danger. Well, and I definitely understand what you're trying to say, which is there's got to be some better way to reward running backs. Like, and just, I don't know what that is, but it's just, like you said, it's just this weird market where you just have these guys that, I mean, Simon brought up Todd Gurley the other week, who's still like under 30. I think he's younger than you, Si. You know, and it's just absolutely wild to think Zeke, 27, I think he is, 27, 28, you know, basically he's going to sign 1 year deals and probably bounce around the league for the rest of the time.
Yeah. It's a pretty short shelf life, and it's pretty tough. The other one's Odell Beckham. He still hasn't signed not a running back, of course, but just as a side note, just to see where he goes. It sort of seems
he's a weird one as well, because he's got all that injury concern.
No contract,
you know,
last playoff run. No, still no contract now. It's sort of, I don't know. Is he just overvaluing himself?
The owners are all colluding. They're all just in this. On these conference 100%. calls, just like, and you know, they're just basically, oh, this guy, he's a bit of a show pony, like, nah, it's, he's asking for $15 million a year, let's peg him down a bit. Just the one last thing on the running backs, what I reckon just adds to all of this is Carolina Panthers last year traded arguably the best running back, definitely one of the top three running backs the league's had in the last 5 years, and Christian McCaffrey over to the 49ers. I don't feel like the Panthers missed a beat with their guys Deontay Foreman and Hubbard. They dominated throughout when they were sort of RB1 and 2. And that just shows you, you know, you lose a guy like McCaffrey, yet you're still a running threat because you've just got these guys that come in and step in.
I think there are some like technicalities with that. Not wrong, but you know, when your quarterbacks are so shit, you know, and they had Darnold and whoever else, their team was designed to run, and they had these guys that are doing it. Are they on the same level as Christian McCaffrey? No, absolutely not.
But
are they serviceable, which is what I think you're trying to say? Absolutely. And it's like, do you want to invest more at your other positions? Get another like stud, like wide receiver, get another, you know, defensive end or something like that, pay them more, lock them up, knowing they've got a longer career, and just let these other guys walk. And I mean, ignoring the trade for Christian McCaffrey, as in what the Panthers got back, because there's a whole bunch of contract stuff in that as well. So, but yeah, it is interesting. And Christian McCaffrey's had injuries as well, but you know, I definitely agree.
Don't have to overthink it. I just more mean the fact that like these guys, we're effective, and I just think that it adds to the fact that teams are going to be like, we don't need to be putting all this money in, like a contract that the Cowboys did for Zeke.
I do wonder with Zeke if there's some like a bit of like worry in the fact that what Zeke did was always behind a Cowboys offensive line. And the Cowboys offensive line is normally always pretty like elite or up there. You know, DeMarco Murray, when he was at the Cowboys like years and years and years ago before Zeke, absolutely tore up. He was dominant. He got he then signed a deal with the Eagles. The Eagles, with coached by Chip Kelly at the time, he did awful there. I wonder if there's a bit of hesitation with any Cowboys running back just from that point of view as well.
It's fair.
I and the point you make, I do just think you can just find value at running back quite easy. So, and you know, in the draft as well. So
rookies, go for it, why not?
Yeah. We're gonna talk NBA now. That's nice. Leading off with the Dallas Mavericks. I looked at the NBA standings today, and I just
did it bring a smile to your face?
And then what's that?
Did it bring a smile to your face seeing?
Well, I scrolled down and I kept scrolling and I kept scrolling and I scrolled past the Lakers and the Thunder, and then I found the Dallas Mavericks, 37-39 on Wednesday, going into tonight's games. Not sure if they're playing tonight. 3-7 over their last 10. It's just imploding. They are imploding. They're in danger of missing the entire playoffs, play-in included. To me, I mean, I think they got fleeced by the Nets in the Kyrie Irving trade anyway. But now the long-term outlook for this side is really, really bad, because there's no way Kyrie's staying there, I don't think. And then you've got nothing to build around him because you traded some good role players to the Nets and some draft picks. I mean, good on them for going for it, but it really doesn't look like it's worked out.
No, it's a pretty interesting one. And I think there's two ways that I'm looking at the Mavericks. One is the short-term stuff for the Kyrie trade. And then one is what seems like a longer-term problem that they've had and got. So kind of tackling the Kyrie stuff first. Seeing the Dallas Mavericks lose because Kyrie's on that team brings me joy. The guy obviously destroyed our Brooklyn Nets. So, you know, no love lost with seeing him lose. I will say, though, it is sad to see the drop in Luka. Luka's always been one of the funnest players to watch in the league, so that does kind of suck a bit to watch that. Since the trades happened, the Mavericks have not won back-to-back games. They could change that on Wednesday night this week if they get a win. They've also got an atrocious record with Kyrie and Luka when they're both on the team. I think they have 4 wins and 8 losses. Obviously, they're both Kyrie and Luka have had injuries, but holy shit, it looks bad. And you've put even more risk on, you know, making your star player in Luka Doncic, who is literally the face of the franchise, extremely disgruntled. So the trade was always high risk from the fact that Kyrie could walk in the offseason, but I think it's done even more damage from the point of view that Kyrie's probably still walking in the offseason. Maybe they do a sign and trade and they can get some assets back from a team like the Lakers. But you now have a disgruntled Luka Doncic. So that scares the shit out of me. So I think that's the short-term stuff. I'll go into the long-term stuff in a bit. But, I mean, Dave, what do you think? Like, am I on the money with this? Am I missing something?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty bleak for them. I'm hopeful that they make the play-in at least. Because at the end of the day, don't like Kyrie or whatever, but you know, I'd prefer to see the Mavericks in the playoff mix in terms of, you know, once the plan kicks off, you know, having Luka and Kyrie on the court, that's, you know, it's good to watch. And you know, a definite preference would be for them to sort of somehow get in there. They're going to have to probably win, how many games have they got left? 6 games left. They probably have to win 4 of them to be safe. So, but yeah, I mean, they're in trouble in the short to medium term. Are we pretty confident that Kyrie goes somewhere else?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Did I read that the Lakers are pretty much out on him? They can't get that to work? Is that right?
Well, this is the thing where I wonder where, like, actually maybe Kyrie's value around the league is pretty low and maybe his best chance at a big deal is in Dallas still. And so maybe there's a chance he actually does stay. But, you know, the way they're playing, you'd have to still think that he's going to look to test the market at least.
I think, like, yep, we'll see where he goes. It'll be very interesting to see where he ends up and what kind of deal he takes. I don't think he stays with the Mavericks. But also, like, I think kind of going back to what I said earlier, there's this longer-term issue with the Mavericks. They traded to get Porzingis. They had to trade Porzingis away. Brunson, obviously, you know, went and signed with the Knicks in the offseason for about $4 million more than the Mavs were paying him. Jason Kidd is one of the worst coaches in the NBA, if not the worst. I feel for any Mavs fan having to constantly watch that guy, like, coach that team. I think he's 100% lost the locker room. I think he probably lost it about 2 or 3 games ago. You know, he's just not backing up his team in the media. He's throwing them under the bus. So I think he's lost the locker room. He will be fired 100% after the season. He's going, and that is going to be a last-ditch effort, or maybe not last-ditch effort. We're not quite there, but it's definitely leading to that, to try to keep Luka happy, because Jason Kidd has not delivered this season at least. Obviously, last season they played upset in the playoffs against teams like the Suns, but Jason Kidd has been awful. He just needs to go. Any Mavs fan, any true Mavs fan, I think would sit there and agree with that. But so I don't think all the season is on Kyrie. I think coaching is playing into it a little bit. Obviously injuries, but holy shit, that Mavs team. Like, you had high hopes going into the season after embarrassing the Suns. And unfortunately, it's looking like you're either in the play-in or you're losing out. I think the only, like, positive is if the Mavs drop out of the playoffs, if they have a top 10 pick, they get to keep their pick, which is a potential lottery pick. Hey, maybe they're in the Web and Yana sweepstakes. If it drops out of top 10, the New York Knicks get their pick. So that's kind of a little interesting storyline to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, they're certainly sacking. I think they have to sack the coach at that point anyway, regardless of who it is, to be honest. But yeah, I don't have a lot more to add because it is just a really disappointing turn of events. Like, I'm not sure what their record is since Kyrie arrived, but they're certainly in a worse place than they were when he was traded there from Brooklyn. And then you look at the games they've got left. They've got the 76ers tonight, Wednesday. Then they've got the Heat, the Hawks, the Kings, the Bulls, and the Spurs. So there's like, I mean, that's tough. Like, you know, the Spurs, certainly they can beat, but even the Bulls are a bit of a challenge on their day, and the other four are all sort of, you know, playing for playoff spots. So that is a challenging last six games for the Mavericks to overturn the teams in front of them, who are also pretty desperate. Like, the Thunder are a good side. The Lakers are playing a bit better of late. So I'm really not sure. You know, maybe they sneak into the play-in tournament, but you know, they're 2.5 games out of the Warriors in sixth. So I think a playoff spot and avoiding the play-in is out of the question at this point. So yeah, disappointing for the Mavs. Did one of us pick Luka to win MVP? And that seems like a good segue into our MVP chat. So what does this mean for Luka Doncic's MVP odds, James Thwaites?
Oh, look, I think we can torpedo Luka's MVP odds. At the start of the season, looks so good, though. Luka's still doing great stuff, but obviously without a team competing for a playoff spot or, like, being near the top of the rankings, it's always going to be hard to justify, especially when you kind of look at the Nets, the Mavericks, and the Suns. Since February 5th of this year, which is basically around that trade time, the Brooklyn Nets have won 8 games, the Mavs have won 9 games, and the Suns have won 11. So at least the Nets have picks coming back and some assets. But look, I think as we're looking at the MVP race, there's kind of a few clear people that are leading the conversation. At the moment, it's Nikola Jokic, and then obviously we've got... can't remember his name. Joel Embiid. So they're definitely leading the front. And the odds are just jumping around all the time at the moment. They're the two front runners. I think Giannis is probably out of the conversation at this point, this close to MVP, this close to the end of the regular season, sorry. Embiid did not play on Saturday against the Nuggets. So he was favorite prior to that happening. After that happening, he dropped out of the top spot. So it's going to be something pretty interesting to watch over the coming games. Like, obviously I'm not a big 76ers fan. I actually hate the 76ers a lot. So I'm not rooting for Embiid as well. I'm rooting for Jokic, and I wanted to see, do the three-peat with the MVP. I think it'd be great for the league. He does not seem to be a stat padder at all. He's even had some jokes about it. He's just a fun dude to watch. So, you know, it would be great to see the Nuggets on top of that get an NBA championship, because, it'd be good for the state of Colorado. It's a good team to kind of mix things up with. So I'm rooting for Jokic. I don't know if that's smart, though. I don't know if it's smart money to put it on Jokic.
Is he somehow underrated at the moment? Like, he is on the verge of potentially winning three straight MVPs, which would be the first time since Larry Bird did it in the early 80s. And I think Wilt Chamberlain did it in the 60s, and Bill Russell also in the 60s. So four players in NBA history have done a three-peat of MVPs.
And those names are, like, you know, three of the biggest names in history.
Exactly. And he's carrying his team to the top of the Western Conference. Yet he doesn't still... I think he's well-known in the NBA, and he's certainly a star. But I think you could probably name five bigger superstars in terms of, you know, name recognition than Jokic still.
I think that's that comes down to the lack of, like, finals, let alone championship. Yeah. You know, that'll probably all change if not only he gets the three-peat, but also leads the team that's probably been arguably the best, certainly probably top two team all year, and leads them to a title, then that conversation changes a little bit. And it's, you know, but looking at individual versus, but there is always that sort of having a title. Same with NFL, you know, having that Super Bowl win, that just adds to your resume. And it's it's an important part of your legacy.
It's just, the thing with Jokic is, he's basically averaging a 25-point triple-double. He's averaging 24.9 points, 11.9 rebounds, 9.9 assists. He's shooting just over 63% from the field, which is insane. And he's almost 40% from 3-point, which to me is just incredible. And it's just, Dave, you touched on it, it's almost like it's a market thing as well. He plays for Denver Nuggets. They're not like a super historic team that's, you know, won lots and lots of championships. I don't even think they've won one. So it would be interesting if he was in a market like New York, you know, LA, and you know, playing for a team, because, you know, it's just a weird one. But I'm hoping Jokic gets up there, because, you know, but I hope it's also followed by a NBA championship for the Nuggets, because it would be nice to see, you know, a new team win it. It was obviously fairly refreshing when the Bucks won it a few years ago. It was obviously just a bit disappointing. It was at the expense of the Nets.
So I just quickly searched two players in NBA history of average triple-doubles through the whole season. Westbrook four times.
Yeah. No, not James Harden.
Westbrook four times.
And Oscar?
And Oscar.
Yeah, Oscar Robertson.
Yeah.
That was crazy because, yeah, that the one time I think Westbrook won or got his one and only MVP was the time he averaged a triple-double, and there was a bunch of stat padding going on. So it's pretty impressive that a guy like Jokic, who is so much bigger and probably less athletic than Westbrook, is able to get out there with this triple-double.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so it is. It's Embiid and Jokic are pretty clearly the favorites. Giannis a distant third, and Jason Tatum is a distant fourth. I mean, you know, there's six or seven games left in this season, so it's to me, it's hardly surprising that we're down to
I'm leaning towards Embiid getting it, and I think. Part of it will just be the voters kind of thinking, you know, he's been huge the last 3 years himself, and he's just not been quite good enough. And I'm not disputing that Jokic should have won the last two. I think that was right. But Embiid had a pretty impressive season last year and came up short. He's probably closer, if not, you know, he's right there. So I just wonder whether it's, you know, it's a 50-50 split, and you're a voter. You're like, you might go for that whole voter. What's the term? Plates where they... Voter fatigue. And yeah, only because I think Embiid is that close, and because he's been pretty phenomenal in the last few seasons. As a fan, the most frustrating part about him is how many of his points are at the free throw line, and, you know, it sort of takes away, you know, ever wanting to back the guy. But he is very hard to defend and effective, and has led the team to an impressive record. It's, you know, not far behind the Celtics.
Yeah, I think when you look at Embiid's stuff, I think injuries have definitely hurt him. I think exactly like you said, the amount of time he spends at the free throw line probably hurts him as well. So Jokic averaging basically 25, 12, and 10, you know, shooting just over 64% field goal, and then just under 40% from the three-point line. Joel Embiid, 33.3 points, 10.2 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 54.5% from the field goal, 34% from 3-point line. Even kind of like looking at that, I'm like, Jokic all day, every day. But I think, you know, if we're going to split hairs on it, it's just that dominant home record as well that the Nuggets have, which kind of seals the deal for me a little bit. A 32-6 at home, which is incredible. So it's at the moment, apart from Memphis, the best home record in the league. So, and we're obviously not giving Ja Morant MVP this year after his behavior.
Well, just to remind you both of our MVP picks to start the season.
Oh God, is this a walk of celebration?
No one's won anything yet. But wait till you had Luka. Dave, mm-hmm. you had Giannis and Simon had Joel Embiid. And I think Simon was told that Joel Embiid was not going to do well this year because James Harden was going to get all the stats. So,
well, to be fair, I'm gonna use Dave's thing here. Shit bet, Si, because it's not coming in first. So get fucked, mate.
And a reminder,
Not comparable. Yeah. That's not comparable because... If the Mariners made the World Series, then your bet that you made at the start of the year, you're feeling you know it's on. Right now we're saying it's a 50-50 Jokic or Embiid. So you put that bet on at the start of the season, probably paying $8. You know, you're very much alive. Not comparable.
Let's just quickly run through the winners we had. Me, the Heat against the Warriors in the finals. Don't think that's happening. Dave, the Bucks against the Warriors. I mean, maybe the Bucks get there. The Nets, I don't think that's happening either.
Yeah.
No, so we did not do too well.
Fair credit to Dave here. Yeah, fair credit to Dave. Dave's alive in this. The rest of us are just fucking terrible.
Well, I mean, we're all alive, but, well, you know. The Warriors, to be fair, have been very good for a couple of months.
They've been great at home as well. Like, they're just shit on the road. And they've had injuries and stuff like that. So the fact that they're still in the conversation is a great thing, because this is kind of what they did last year when they struggled a bit and then they scraped into the playoffs and then just fucking tore up. So,
yeah. Certainly wouldn't write them off. But, yeah, a week or so, maybe 10 days to go in the NBA season. So very soon we will be talking about the play-in tournament and then the playoffs as well. So looking forward to that. All right, opening day tomorrow in baseball, NBA, NFL draft a few weeks away. Lots on the calendar, so lots to talk about. Subscribe, like us on Instagram, do what you need to do. We'll be back next week.